Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app.
Get tender USDA Choice boneless chuck roast or stew meat for $6.99 a pound. Then get 2-liter bottles of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $1.49 each, all with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Greetings, travelers.
Yes, it is I and Carrie. Why? Because Bo, I don't know. We might have a curse on the Erie Travels crew at this point is what I'm thinking. Bo is a little bit under the weather. So I have the amazing Carrie joining me today. And we're super excited because this is Halloween week. So we have one more live the night before Halloween where we're going to do a bunch of listener tales and stuff. So that's super exciting. And I'm going to throw this in the notes of our podcast for our podcast listeners. I just want to say there's a little bit of breaking news, which is there is an animal that a zoo is asking for help identifying that has quote unquote shown up in other animal paddocks. The zoo literally reached out with pictures of it. And it's like, can somebody help us identify this? And I don't know what that says about the zoo, Carrie. What are your thoughts?
The pictures look really weird. I don't even know.
That's true. I have no idea what it is, but I want somebody to identify it and go, that's a blah. Like, it's a simple thing. Like, that's a possum. It's not a possum, by the way. I don't know what the hell it is. It's got a horn and everything. But I hope everybody's being super, super careful because the veil is very, very thin. All of our little friendly visitors, and we've been inundated with listener tales. So don't forget to send them to us at erietravels.com or info@erietravels. But I'm not going to take too long because we have a freaking amazing guest today. So I'm going to bring him out because we are very, very lucky. We have the amazing Lyle Blackburn. Woo! Welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. I want to start with because I think it's always important to get origin stories. So I found out just moments ago that you're a musician, but I want to know how you went from musician to cryptids. Like, how did you get into cryptids?
Well, it started on a dark and stormy night in Texas.
I love that.
This was just something I loved as far back as I can remember. I mean, first off, I remember liking movie monsters and anything scary or spooky, Halloween, everything like that. And then when I was in third grade, I got a book called Strange But True by Daniel Cohen. And it had all these strange tales, and it had a chapter on Bigfoot, Yeti, and the Loch Ness Monster. And that was the first I remember hearing of those. And of course, when I read this, it's like, I mean, Loch Ness Monster, but people see it in real life. I'm thinking, wow, this is cool because this is a monster you might see. This is like real stuff. And my father is an avid hunter. So I grew up basically from the time I could walk, I was in the woods and camping and hunting and all that stuff. So, you know, wooded places, you know, kind of merged with, I guess, tales of monsters, you know, so I was just always into it. Well, of course, you got to make a living in life. So I thought, well, a career in rock and roll would be a good one. So I was good at writing and music. Those are the two things I could do. So that's pretty much all I've ever done is I've written for some magazines and done some professional writing and toured around the world as a musician with a couple of various bands. So, but in the process of that, I would always sit in the tour bus and read Bigfoot books, and all the other guys are partying or whatever. Like, what are you doing? And, you know, I'd watch The Legend of Boggy Creek. I found it at a truck stop on DVD once, and I watched it every night. I would be sitting in the van watching it on a DVD player, while they were getting ready, and of course I'd go in and I'd perform and play or whatever, but, and then I wanted to write a book, and that resulted because I was working for Rue Morgue Horror Magazine. It's a big, widely circulated magazine. I thought, man, I want to write a book. What is my favorite subject? I thought, The Legend of Boggy Creek. It says a true story. You know, what is that story? And so I just kind of took a break from touring and stuff and just went and wrote the book, researched and did all that stuff. And I just did it because I wanted to. And then within months, I was getting calls from television shows like Monsters and Mysteries in America, Finding Bigfoot. The Finding Bigfoot guys showed up at my book release party in Dallas. It was really crazy. And so I thought, well, this is awesome, you know, and then, you know, got invited to speak about this and at various conferences. So I just went from there and found out that you could, you know, research this and write books and make something of it.
So I'm not as familiar with The Legend of Boggy Creek. So for those that like me that maybe don't know it the way you do, obviously, what is The Legend of Boggy Creek?
The Legend of Boggy Creek was a movie, a sort of a docudrama horror film that came out in 1972. And the movie was based on sightings of a hairy, scary Sasquatch-like creature in southwest Arkansas, which is only about 3 hours from where I live in Texas. I was born in Fort Worth and live in Dallas-Fort Worth. So this was very close to me. And I saw that movie in a drive-in sometime in the 70s. I was so young, I just don't remember many details other than the movie was awesome and it was like scary. And it was just the perfect blend of outdoors and this scary small town and a cryptid. So it was something that, you know, to a certain age group, everyone saw that. I mean, it was a movie that was made independently in southern Arkansas, but it went on to tour in, of course, in movie theaters, drive-ins, and was on television in the late 70s. And anybody back in those days that was into cryptids, you know, you had the Patterson-Gimlin film, you had the show In Search Of, maybe Mysterious Monsters, movies like that, and The Legend of Boggy Creek. So a lot of your, you know, notable Bigfoot researchers or cryptid researchers, Lauren Coleman, Cliff Berrickman, you know, all these guys had seen The Legend of Boggy Creek. So it was instrumental in sort of inspiring us because it was done in a docudrama format. And so myself included, especially because it was my zone and my area, that it just fascinated me.
Did they take a lot of liberties with the movie, or were they fairly accurate as far as that goes?
It was very accurate, actually. It spans a time period from about 1954 to 1971, and reports of the creature didn't become public until 1971, in which a family was attacked, and then there was a bunch of other stories that followed up. So in the 71, there was all sorts of newspaper articles in the Texarkana Gazette telling about this, and then that kind of brought forth all these older stories that the old timers said, well, hey, there's been sightings down here, all kinds of scary incidents that, you know, they just didn't run to the press, obviously. This was the Sulphur River bottoms, very remote, rural, rugged countryside. And so really the movie, the way Charles Pierce, the director, did it was perfect because he had real people reenacting the stuff on location, sometimes on location, literally where the sightings had occurred. And that gave it this sort of like a docudrama or a documentary, yet it was really well written and was scary. And so they didn't have to take a lot of liberties because the stories that, as we well know in cryptid research, man, these stories don't need any help. They're already done, you know, alarming, spooky, or whatever already. So if he could just film that in such a way to get that across, and he very well did. And the movie's a little bit dated now, but at the time, I mean, it literally scared everyone that saw it.
You know, I wonder, because you researched it, they did a really good job, but this was a pretty large time period that these incidents were occurring. Did you find anything really unexpected when you went down your research rabbit hole on this?
Well, yes. I kind of thought that I was going to be writing mostly just about the history of that time period of the creature and the making of the movie, and sort of it just fizzled out in the 70s or something. The show notes or whatever, they would always say it started in the 40s. But I was surprised to learn that there had been sightings dating back even further once you kind of talked to those locals, and that there had been sightings that continued on to the 80s, 90s, 2000s that didn't have any press. No one really talked about that anymore. You know, the newspaper had moved on and everybody kind of thought, you know, that all happened in the 70s. But even since writing my first book, The Beast of Boggy Creek, which came out in 2012, I've written a case book and other stuff because I keep learning of new ones, and new ones keep happening and more sightings, and man, it just keeps going.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because when it comes to things with Sasquatch type creatures and stuff like this, it's the more that I've learned about it too, I just go, this isn't just one creature that's just sitting there. Like, they tend to be, I think, more like packs or communities, whatever the right, you know, we say a murder of crows. Do we have what happened? Is there a name for a grouping of Sasquatches? Is there like an official name for it?
Yeah, I guess that gets tossed around. Is it Big Feet? Is it Sasquatches? One guy said Sasquaddle. That we used to call him that.
I thought that was funny. Sasquatch sounds like it would have duck feet, and I love the entire picture of that. It's a Sasquatch with little duck feet. But we need to come up. Okay, I'm just going to throw this out of the community. We need to come up with a really good name because it's like a murder of crows. We need to come up with a really, you know, great name for a clan of Sasquatches. But yeah. I think it's interesting because I feel like people sometimes think this is like a solitary creature by itself hanging out in this particular area. And then not, but that's not the way evolution works even. Like, it, you know, it would be, is it immortal then? So it kind of makes me wonder, is whatever that grouping of Sasquatches, one of those things that is still there? Like, are they still in that area? Do you think they are?
Yes. A bumble of Bigfoot. Good proposals. And I did like clan of Bigfoots. That seems, you know, a clan. It seems, you know, because, you know, a lot of times you call regionalized people that have, you know, that are in maybe the backwoods. I don't know. That's a good one. But yeah, I mean, you know, the movie kind of portrays it as a singular creature. He's very lonely. They give him a lot of empathy, and that makes the movie work. But when you start looking at it in sort of a more common sense thing, and you got sightings dating back, the earliest one I can date right there in that area is 1908. And we have sightings dating up to this year. Obviously, it's probably, if we even perceive that, if there are any sort of flesh and blood type thing, they can't be that old. So in order to propagate and all of that, there would need to be a number of them living down there, and that could very well be, and that would explain some of the differences in reports, because sometimes, you know, people report it and say it's got brownish hair or just very black or reddish, 7 feet, 5 feet. So you would presume that there's multiple individuals, and in this Sulphur River bottoms, a lot of that is still very undeveloped. Some of that part down there, it looks exactly the way it did in 1971 when the, you know, sightings were making the newspapers. So it's reasonable that there could be a clan or a bumble of creatures down in there, or whatever you want to call it.
I think I like clan. Yeah. It kind of gives you a family feel, and I feel like these are creatures with family.
Yeah, no, I really think so. Where they said tribes of Bigfoot. I think it's really, that part is very fascinating when you get to, especially because, you know, we always go, why people don't talk about these events. And you're talking back to 1908. You go, why didn't people talk about it? Why didn't they bring it up? And we constantly have to go, most people do not react well when you say there is a monster and you saw a monster in this area. Like, that is generally not an accepted communication through society. So,
well, this is why we don't have panthers and wolves and, you know.
True.
Yeah, I mean, back, your reputation, especially in times past, you know, in your community was very important. And I think nowadays people are more likely to say it because they've seen numerous cable TV shows and internet posts about people seeing Sasquatch. But, you know, think about it, in the 1940s and 50s, if you saw this, you're probably not going to tell your neighbors that you saw a big, hairy, they didn't even have the word Bigfoot, you know, at this time. They just, it looked sort of like a gorilla, or it was this weird, people just make fun of you. So yeah. I think that a lot of those older ones, you know, you can kind of get out of people now, but it was difficult back then, and they didn't even have a collective way to describe it, because especially in the South, you know, I mean, Bigfoot, the term Bigfoot wasn't until late 50s, but you're talking about something, you know, if you saw something in 1946, what do you call it? And especially down here, that's why they call the creature was called the Falk Monster. Yeah, it had other names, Jonesville Monster, Falk Monster, just depends on the how they referred to it. But the newspaper dubbed it the Falk Monster because all this took place close to a little town called Falk, Arkansas. But yeah, so a lot of these, a lot of what I've done with my research and later, like my casebook, has resulted from me getting to know more and more people up there and more people that would be willing to share their story that they wouldn't some years ago. And I just kind of keep adding those sort of, I've got this, you know, report timeline of just, and I'll fit them in there wherever they happened. And it just keeps growing.
Do you think, since you kind of sort of, and it sounds like when you stepped into this scene, you stepped into the scene. It wasn't like I wrote this little book. It was like I wrote this book and then everybody found out about this book, right? Do you think now, since, you know, 2012, when you published this, we're like, 12 years later, what has that evolution been like in for you as a writer since that started? Because did you think when you published that first book, I'm just going to keep writing books about, you know, monsters, basically? Like, was that your thought, or did that suddenly like evolve because of what the response to the book?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I had no really thoughts about other books. I just thought that would be a cool book, and I knew people were into Bigfoot, and I was starting to meet guys who were into Bigfoot and stuff. I never thought beyond that. And it's mind blowing to see how that, the timing. And of course I picked a really good subject, because I didn't realize the popularity of that movie among Bigfoot enthusiasts until I started appearing at conferences and stuff, and people would come up, "Oh yeah, I love that movie," or "it scared me to death," or whatever. Like that one guy posted, you know, it was like a staple, you know, they see it at the drive-in, or they'd watch it with their dad. But, you know, that they kind of jump started a new era of celebration of the legend of Boggy Creek, because there's a place called the Monster Mart there, which is like a little convenience store. At the time, and when I started researching in 2009, they had a couple of newspaper clippings on a cork board and not much to see. Now the owner has been inspired because, you know, the book, and now, and then subsequently television shows have covered it a lot more. It has this giant Bigfoot over the top of the building. There's we've done a museum in there where you can see artifacts, all this stuff. And even the Legend of Boggy Creek itself, it existed on basically bootleg DVDs and old VHS. And I could have never imagined that I would be involved with what came to be the restoration of the movie by Eastman Kodak, as I collaborated with Pam Pierce, the director's daughter, who got the rights, properly restored this from a good print that we found. We had to search for prints of it that were not damaged. I mean, this was just in, you know, just scattered about. And so, you know, there's a new HD version of it. And I do a commentary track, a bonus feature, you know, on this movie. And now every time a television show, you know, I've been on The Unexplained and Monsters and Mysteries America, all the ones that have covered the Falk Monster, I get interviewed. So it's so surreal to just, I'm the kid who saw it in the drive-in, and now people, you know, I'm writing more books and researching it. It's really surreal that all this happens.
You've become the nexus of bringing people together over this.
And I'm glad to do it, but I never had any thoughts of any of that. I just thought it was a cool story, and I wanted to know, because it always says a true story, you know, on that tagline on the poster, and I'm always like, I want to know exactly. I want to know which of these people were real, and what I learned, it was all real. And wow. So, yeah, it's really just built and built into far more than I could have envisioned.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, somebody had a question, then I'll go on to my next one. It says, Mr. Blackburn, do you think the Falk Monster, Momo, and the Crawford County creature could all be the same Bigfoot or tribe of them?
Well, you know, the distance between some of those is quite far. You know, eastern Missouri to southern Arkansas is a really long way. So as far as being a part of the same sort of tribe, or, you know, if we want to say there's groupings, I don't think so. But I think they're absolutely probably similar creatures, if not the same species. I mean, they're essentially described much the same. And, you know, while we grapple with trying to explain Bigfoot as a singular, you know, encompassing term to one sort of mysterious creature, it's hard to imagine that there may be dozens and dozens of variations, but I mean, there could be, but there's no way to really tell, because sighting descriptions and conditions in which people see these can be scary or brief, and the consensus is hard to get. They're not exactly the same, but, and I think he's referring also to Momo is said to have a three-toed footprint, and the Falk Monster a three-toed footprint and stuff like that. But it's even in question as to whether these creatures actually have three toes, or there's individuals that have a deformity or something else. But without some of these creatures, like, to examine or to have a closer look, it's all just speculation, you know.
No, totally. We jokingly say it, but the truth is that that kind of deformity sometimes comes from incest. So it's like, is there incest in some of these things? But, you know, not that that doesn't happen in very evolved species, especially depending on the shrinking size of a group of them, right? You know, that can easily happen, because a lot of times that, you know, desire to mate is very different than a logical part of your, hey, that's my half sister brain, right? It's interesting, but I think there can be a huge difference. Like any kind of creature, when it grows in different areas and different weather climates and different things, it's kind of like, you know, a skunk ape is going to evolve very differently than something up in the Pacific Northwest that has, oh wait, snow, right? Because there's not really snow in Florida for the most part. So I think it's, you know, a very, very interesting and sort of, it will be cool when and if we can get to do any sort of scientific research around this creature, right? We jokingly said there should be a band named called Bigfoot Incest, like an 80s cover band. It's terrible, but yeah, people still want the shirt. So, okay, I'm curious. So you did The Legend of Boggy Creek. Where did that kind of go for you? Like, where did you then want to put, after having that amount of attention on that particular topic, but then what other creatures did you kind of get involved in by default? Like, I mean, I know people suddenly go, what about Frogman? You know, like, they get excited. So where was your next, like, I want to look into this creature?
Well, I wasn't sure, because then of course, I had to think, okay, what do I do next? This is fun. And I can travel around and do stuff without an entourage of a band or a tour bus. And it was refreshing. And I thought, okay, I'll consider another book. But I wasn't sure what. But I liked the Legend of Boggy Creek. It was it was a southern Bigfoot. It was a southern tail. It was swampy in nature. So I thought, what would an average person do in this situation? I went on what I called a swamp tour, in which I went to numerous swamps around the, mostly in the southeast part of the country, to Okefenokee, Honey Island Swamp, Skateboard Swamp, all sorts of swamps, and were talking to people and looking into cases of swampy kind of cryptids. And I kind of intended to do maybe a more encompassing swamp book, but I went to Bishopville, South Carolina, where they had tales of a creature called the Lizard Man. And it had been seen in Skateboard Swamp, and it had allegedly attacked a kid in 1988 and all this stuff. And I'd heard of that, and, you know, read some stories. But I met up with a retired police officer who was the sheriff at the time all that went down, and he had all these police files and all this stuff. And I thought, wow, this is pretty cool. And it's a swampy creature, kind of a creature from the Black Lagoon in modern times. And so that was good. And so when I was there, the newspaper came out and wanted to interview me. So like, okay, cool. And so I talked about my book and what I was looking into with the swamps. And when I got home from my swamp tour, somebody sent me a copy of that newspaper, and it said, writer plans to write book on Lizard Man, which
Oh, wow.
And I thought, well, I guess I'm writing a book on the Lizard Man.
I will take all your fans are like, yay! And you're like, oh, okay.
That's where fate is taking me. So that's what I did. And I thought the book on the Lizard Man was a good one as well, because it was a similar feel. It was a southern tale. You had police after it, and, you know, it didn't have a famous movie, but it had all the ingredients of the media circus. And also, I didn't really want to be, people call me a Bigfoot researcher, but really I just like all cryptid cases. I like spooky monsters that people see in real life. And I didn't want to be pigeoned as a Bigfoot, just a Bigfoot guy. So the Lizard Man, you know, kind of follow up with that. So it's another cryptid, you know, even though I've returned to the Bigfoot theme quite a bit, there's a lot to that. But, you know, that's kind of where it went from there. And then the Lizard Man was, you know, I was on a publisher at the time, and these, you know, Beast of Boggy Creek was their fastest selling book, they said, of all time. You know, so I followed that with the Lizard Man, and that really, once I did that, then I was kind of becoming, I would say a template or a format as to how to do these books. And now I later went and wrote the swamp book, which is called Sinister Swamps, but that didn't come out until 2020 because of how big that subject got with all these notorious swamps in North America. So I finally did the book that I had done a lot of research on way back in 2013. It all kind of piles up, and I'm always researching different stuff. And it may, you know, like I said, I just kind of go sometimes where things lead me.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Prepare to be devoured. The Wolves of Wharton is a 6-part complete book series by Eerie Travels producer Beau Lake. It has been called dark and visceral, steamy, dramatic, and a fresh take on the werewolf mythos. If you like action, adventure, a large serving of body horror, and some steamy relations, the Wolves of Wharton series is for you. Pick it up wherever books are sold or at linktree.com/Beau_Lake.
on the Lizard Man, I mean, Lizard Man, you know, some of these other things, again, talk about it like it's a singular and only creature that existed when this happened. But what did you find, you know, because we talk about cryptids, which are, you know, creatures, monsters, whatever, but what was like something you didn't expect to find out about that Lizard Man thing? Because there was a police report, right? There was a, like, there's a situation. How far did that go is to proving that something actually happened to that kid?
Well, the witness, that kid, Christopher Davis, who claimed that he had a flat tire one evening on the way home from work out there in this road that cuts through Skateboard Swamp. And as he finished up changing the tire, he looks up and sees this thing on two legs coming at him in the moonlight. And at first he thought it was a person, which would have been scary enough. But then he could see it was brownish or greenish and looked to be scaly and, you know, had three fingers on its hands. And, you know, he just jumped in the car and drove off, and the thing tried to get on the car. He was interviewed by Sheriff Truesdale, a guy that I knew. He's since passed away, but I spent time with him researching this. Sheriff Truesdale, I mean, he was trained by the FBI. He knew when people were lying, when they were not. Christopher Davis eventually undertook a lie detector test and was thought to be, you know, very truthful. Something happened to that kid. He saw something he couldn't explain, and something we can't quite explain ourselves, because, you know, the notion of a half reptile, half human, or something like that, you know, is a stretch biologically, obviously, unless we play in weirder theories or whatever. But there were other sightings, and what I was surprised, and I have the witness statements, because those police, they would take these witnesses. In one case, a family of four people saw this at one time. They would take them in and make them write down what they had seen, you know, separate them, just like a real police case. And a lot of them noted that they thought it had hair, it looked brownish, and one of them even said it kind of looked like a Sasquatch. So maybe a Lizard Man is a stretch, but I thought, well, what if we have a swampy Sasquatch, you know, could have a skin condition covered in algae. I mean, this is at night. It's a scary place out there. You know, it could have been wet or glistening. Maybe that's a little more plausible, even though we're explaining one cryptid with another one, which most people would say, well, you know, that's not logical. But hey, we have a lot of Bigfoot evidence and it seems plausible. So, you know, maybe it was that. But the cool thing I like is they all have these regional names, like the Falk Monster, Boggy Creek Monster, Momo, you know, Crawford Creature, the Lizard Man. Well, that's just the name that stuck, you know, and the newspaper picked up, but that doesn't mean it's a lizard per se. That's just what they called it. And that makes it have a little bit more personality, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting to me because I got into this via Mark in the whole Eerie Travels thing. Like, I knew about the creatures and stuff like that, and you know, but I wasn't as in deep into this now that I feel like I'm getting sometimes pushed into the deep end of the pool on this. But what I think is always interesting is, like, you tell me that description and then I go, let's talk about the Flatwoods Monster. But the day after, when the metal suit was half gone and people said that they had a lizard type creature, like, even scratched the car and stuff. And then you go, well, that was something. Like, to me, Flatwoods is something in a suit. Like, that, if you look at the suit, metallic skirt, that's not the creature itself. It's what the creature was in the whatever, the super suit, so to speak. So then I go, okay, well, it's not far off in that area to have a creature like that, having been experienced with the things. Is that what they experienced? Something that was maybe left behind or here or whatever. And you go, is that what they saw? Because I also think too, yeah, there's a degree of all these differences, but it's kind of like, you know, the looks now of the Hodag and stuff like that, potentially being some of these other serpent type creatures that have been seen all along this river, you know, way this entire time. And again, getting different names because of who's encountering it and whether it was you know, where in history it was encountered. And is it a Meemaw and Peepaw going, yeah, that's the rock creature, you know, because that's just what they named it, because it kind of looked like a rock till it moved. So I think it's, this is just such a fascinating thing. And especially when you go through people who are not, you know, it's not like you have Barney Fife, the sheriff, in every one of these situations that is just going, okay, scary creature. I mean, you're FBI trained. You have people that are trained to go, is this person drunk or did they actually see something, you know? And when you have enough of them, you got to go, no, they saw something. Now, what is it? I agree with you. It could be a Bigfoot that's wet or that lives in the swamp. And, you know, that's been part of the thing for people in like Florida and the whole South is seeing these things is they are muddy and stinky and very different than the Sasquatches that you see up in the Pacific Northwest or even up here in North Carolina where I live. You know, there was a bunch of people describing a gray furred Sasquatch that they had been seen multiple times, like a group of them. And you go, well, what is that? Why do they have gray hair now? Those ones, right? Or silvery, like, are they just old? Is that what happens? It's just, I don't know. It's really fascinating to me. It must have been really interesting for you liking all this stuff and then going down these rabbit holes. Cause you know, I've had people come talk to me and tell me stories, but I haven't gone to interview witnesses. But I know Mark and Carrie talk about how, like Mothman, for instance, that in witnesses they interviewed said it looked like a big flying Sasquatch. They did not say it looked like a creature with moth wings, right? Which is the statue and all of that stuff as people talk about that. But that's not what the witnesses they interviewed said it looked like. So, you know, it's got to be interesting hearing from these different witnesses, including the Sasquatch ones that go from 5 feet to 8 feet, right, in description?
Yeah, you know, it is a bit mind-boggling, the differences in description of these things, but there's definitely a possibility that you can see similarities in different ones. And you know, any of this, it's hard to say, is it a flesh and blood creature, is it, you know, Flatwoods monster? Obviously there's a flying object scene, and then there's a creature we can say extraterrestrial. The lizard man could be kind of extraterrestrial, but no corresponding UFO sightings were made. So, you know, we just try to sort out a puzzle that we don't have all the pieces to, but it's definitely interesting. And I, you know, in all my books and most of my stuff, I've gone to the places where it all happened. You know, I've been to the TNT area where Mothman, I've been in the Skateboar Swamp, Boggy Creek area billions of times. And when you interview people there and you can interview people face to face and you can look most, you know, when I can go out and look at the exact place where people said they saw it, I can make a real assessment as to whether something like that could be concealed out here or would be here. And most of the time you're like, yeah, this is a spooky, creepy place. And, you know, the TNT area with Mothman, there's just a weird vibe about that place.
Oh, I agree. I went there for the first time this year during the Mothman Festival. And you can ask Carrie, because I went in and we went into one of the domes, right? Which I, for whatever reason, in my mind, I didn't quite realize was literally a dome. I don't know why, when people were like, oh, the domes. I was like, yeah, the domes. And I got there and I'm like, oh, the actual dome. It's a dome. It's like, anyway, I'm here all night, peeps. I just didn't get it. And I remember walking in and I'm just in the area and I'm like, no, I don't need to stay here. Like, I don't know what it was about that entire area, but I was like, this does not have a warm and fuzzy feeling at all to me. Like, this was not like even calm and serene. It's creepy to me.
Yeah, which may suggest that some of these places, you know, I mean, even John Keel suggested there were certain areas, locations, place, geography, or that created these things, that had a window to the paranormal or something. And so, yeah, you're not sure, is it the creature or the location, you know, and you're processing that through the filters of the witnesses who all saw it under different circumstances and saw a little bit, just enough to add to it. So it's a constant building of these cases where you keep having more witnesses, and then you look for the consistencies throughout.
Oh, somebody's asking, have you ever researched the Kansas City area Mothman sightings?
I have not looked into that, no.
I haven't looked into that. Has Mark looked into the Kansas City ones?
That's definitely something he's researching, especially with on the Unsolved Mysteries stuff, a lot more of that has been being brought up. So yeah, that's probably going to be a future episode.
Yeah, I was going to say they sent us a bunch of videos because we said something about that. And so they just sent us a bunch of videos that were turned into them about Mothman. I don't know if they're doing an I Told You So. I haven't looked into it yet, but they might be doing an I Told You So. And then I will completely eat crow on that situation. I didn't say it didn't happen. I just was like, oh, this is interesting, all these people. And then, you know, it was very, very, like, they suddenly were like, here, have all the videos. And we're like, okay, we'll look at the videos. So what are you working on now? I know you have a couple events this year, and then you're going to take a little bit of like a breath here in life and the universe, but what is your next project that you're working on?
Well, I don't really have a next exactly. I just finished a book that I've been working on for a while about the Lake Worth Monster, which is a one very close to where I live in Fort Worth. And that's sort of as much my hometown monster as any. And so I wrote a book on that just because I keep getting asked by the library and stuff to speak on it. I thought, well, I should write a book.
Without giving away what's coming out in the book, what is the Lake Worth Monster?
The Lake Worth Monster was a case that started in 1969, and it was initially described by the original witness as a white, hairy, upright goat man type thing. It came out in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, which was the huge newspaper here in Fort Worth, and that resulted in the next day having 30 or 40 people seeing something run up on a ridge. You had 30 witnesses at one time, including police officers. Police looked into this. A lot of crazy stuff went on. But the subsequent witnesses mostly described it more in terms of a white ape-like creature, sort of a white Bigfoot. So you kind of have, it kind of crosses the line between Goatman and Bigfoot. Just very much a monster in the woods kind of thing. And a lot of people I've met over the years in this area either were there or had something to do with it. There's been other incidents that happened after the 1969. And, you know, it just kind of circles me with all this sort of stuff until I can just sort of take it all and lay it out into a book. Because the newspaper will still bring this up every so often, a retrospective and stuff. And there was a book written in 1969, but it didn't encompass all the stuff. So that's that creature, and it's another one that just I like these regional monsters that have a name, and it has some newspaper coverage, and monster hunters went after it, and just all those ingredients like the other ones. So yeah, I've been working on that. That just came out, and the city of Fort Worth and their Nature Center just hosted 2 days ago the Lake Worth Monster Bash, which was the 55th year anniversary of the original newspaper article. The city backs this, and we drew more than 2,000 people, which helps fund the Nature Center. It's a big chunk of land out there near this Lake Worth, north of Fort Worth. So it's always great to kind of give back to the community and, you know, raise money for good stuff like preserving pieces of nature where kids can go. And so that I've been working on a lot of that and done so many events this year, more than I ever have. I still have two to go.
Wow.
And so then I'll take a break to then kind of see what I want to do next. I may always have ideas, books that I'm almost writing in my head, but I don't really have a specific, you know, thing to just run right to next.
See, now I'm wondering if this creature is related to the Pope Lick. and the popelik just was armed itself, like, because the popelik was a goat type creature. See, this is one of these things. If you're willing to step back and look and go,
creature type too, yeah,
yeah. Is this another version of that creature, or is it a Sasquatch, or do people see two completely different creatures just in the same sort of sphere? Because we know people have seen like dogmen and Bigfoot in similar areas and stuff like that. Just gets me going. Like, is this? But I love when the communities embrace it too. I think that's so important because it's a part of history. It really is. I mean, that many people, it's not like we always make jokes about the veggie man, you know, the one guy who's, you know, admitted he was high on mushrooms that saw the vegetable flying saucer man. You kind of go, we're not going to write that one down. Like, that we'll note it, but we're not going to do a whole bunch of research into the veggie man if one human who admittedly was high on mushrooms saw it. But 30 witnesses to this thing, you got to go, well, they're not all wrong, right?
Yeah, again, people saw something and it was, you know, got a lot of, it was what we would call viral today, but back in the newspaper at the time when people read newspapers, it was a big deal. But yeah, I mean, in my book, I kind of address that sort of, okay, what is a goat man? Because, you know, most people are familiar with the concept of a Bigfoot, but goat man's a little more like urban legend meets cryptid somewhere in there. And so I do discuss like the relationship to the popelik monster and the Maryland goat man, which is probably the most famous cryptid goat man. Mm-hmm. And how are those things related or not related, and what are similarities to it? And those are really interesting things. I also just love the phenomenon of people's of folklore, how our fascination with monsters and how a lot of these transform to modern cryptid or paranormal research. And it's because, you know, these things have been with us all along and they're just known as different things. I mean, even religion has all these sort of like gods with lizard heads and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so we've always been fascinated with it. And, you know, do we speculate that they've always been here and people see them, but it's our filters and our society as to how we spin it. You know, it's a god, it's an alien, it's a cryptid, but no matter what, the bottom line, you have things that people see that we just don't have a grasp on. We can't say what they are. We can only say that rational, normal people run into things that are presumably unknown.
No, and I love that you said it like that, because I mean, even at the beginning of the show, we talked about the zoo who sent a picture out of this. It kind of looks like a deer-like creature, a little bit, like four-legged. But they're like, hi, we don't know what this is. And for a zoo to come out and go, because you know they shared that amongst their community before they went, we don't know what this is. Does anybody want to tell us what this is? I think it's really interesting because we constantly are discovering new creatures and new things. And you just, you know, it's kind of like the whole panther thing where people were like, I think I saw a panther. And so many people have heard like, there's no way. There are definitely panthers, at least up in our North Carolina area, because people keep getting them on their trail cam. Like, legitimate panther like size type things, and people are like, oh no, they don't live here. Well, they're at least traversing the area because people keep seeing them. So even though that's a like a real animal, I think all these things can be some degree, and whether they're intelligent like we are or some degree of intelligence, because I think people forget there's a lot of animals that are, you know, just as intelligent, at times just evolved differently than we did. I mean, they talk about that with like dolphins and different gorillas and stuff. Like, they have a whole level of intelligence. They just can't sit down and have a conversation in English or whatever with us, and therefore people discount their intelligence level, you know?
I was going to ask, do you have any possible tips for anyone who wants to go down your rabbit hole and maybe research a local cryptid and get into doing this?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, it's a bit of investigative journalism. You just, you know, if you find a shred of story that suggests somebody had seen something in your area, you know, you can do a search of newspaper articles, you know, online and see if it, you know, there's newspaper reports, or if you know a person that said they saw it, you know, go interview that person And a lot of times they can point you to other people who have similar stories. You know, a lot of that is just boots on the ground to find some of it if it's not already publicized. And, you know, just sort of follow the trail where it leads, interviewing people and then writing up what each person said, you know, recording it, get them on video. And then, of course, go to the location, you know, even if the location's changed. You know, I mean, I've gone to places like Defiance, Ohio, where the famous Defiance werewolf was seen in 1972. Well, the rail yard doesn't look the same now, but just at least going there, you get a sense of like, okay, you know, you put that story into perspective instead of just reading it. You put yourself there, and then you can, you know, then you can document it. You can make a podcast episode or a, you know, a book if there's enough to it. But yeah, it just sort of takes time and dedication, and also not just Googling stuff. I'll tell you right now, Wikipedia is very wrong about a lot of these cases. I was doing some Dogman research about the first historical sighting of Dogman. Every single website echoes the same wrong information, all of them. They just steal it. And a lot of these older sightings, I used to always try to trace back to the origin, and it was almost always Lauren Coleman, who had first fielded the story, written about it in a book, and then was copied to 50 other websites. So always try to trace back to the source material where, you know, people say that there's, well, who, you know, or it was first cited here, and, you know, where's the newspaper article or where's that source? When you trace it back to the original source, you know, at least you're getting the closest firsthand story that you can possibly get. So that's how I do it.
I agree. I really think a problem with the internet is it's become an echo chamber of just people taking an article, rewording it a little bit, and then all of a sudden they're just making more and more of the same thing without adding anything to it. Did you have any barriers with trying to talk to people who were really reluctant to talk, or were you able to approach them and show like, no, I'm taking this seriously, it's okay to talk to me?
Certainly, you know, and especially in the Boggy Creek case, you know, there had been a movie, and it was super famous, and people had, I mean, that town had 500 people, the population of Falk. At times, there was double that amount of yahoos down there with shotguns and 12 packs, and just, it was a circus, and they were tired of it, and they didn't want to talk about it. News stories would sometimes chuckle at it, and nobody took it seriously. And that's where it kind of was lying until I got up there. I said, this is a serious book. I'm not making fun or judging. I'm telling what these hardworking people here saw, and what is the story behind the movie? Who are the people? And slowly but surely, especially with the help of a guy who runs a historical museum in that county, he had been raised there, so he'd say, please come down and talk to Lyle. And, you know, once I kept returning several times, they begin to say, well, he's not going away, and he seems capable of this. And just getting to know the people, that's what made them open up. And even that, there had been a few people who just didn't want to talk about it. They'd had enough people laughing at them, and they just, that was it, you know, and you can understand that. But yeah, that sometimes people are reluctant.
I can understand that, because again, you don't want to be made fun of. You don't want to be called stupid. You don't want to be, you know, lessened, because one of the worst things we do is, you know, perception is reality. So that's that person's perception. And to say your perception is wrong, it's just, it is not a good thing. So what are the two events you're still doing this year? Where can people go see you before you sneak away into Rockstarville?
Well, there's one coming up November 9th in Waxahachie, Texas. It's a paranormal event. Myself, Ken Gerhard, David Weatherly, some other guys, a lot of Texas guys will be there. And then the following weekend, November 15th and 16th, I believe, I will be at the Toledo Bend Bigfoot Symposium, which is in Zwali, Louisiana.
Toledo Bigfoot Symposiums in Louisiana.
Yes.
Okay, just want to make sure I heard that correctly.
Yes, Toledo Bend in Louisiana. And that'll be a good one, because Louisiana is starting to have a few more events like this, so this is their first year for that. But myself, Russ Accord from Expedition Bigfoot, and other notable researchers will be at that as well. So that'll be a fun one. I love to go to Louisiana, you know. So yeah, a couple more events. This is the most I've had in 1 year. There's just a lot of them, and they're fun. I like to do them, but yeah, I'll be looking forward to some downtime so I can think about research and actually get out in the woods, because once hunting season's over, then it's like cryptid season, even though it's colder. But down here in the south, the bugs and everything and the heat has been really bad this year, so I look forward to getting out when, you know, the woods have less people and less bugs.
No, the less people with guns and less bugs are probably a good plan if you're going to hunt cryptids or, you know, try to find them. I did have a question. What is a very weird thing somebody has told you through all your research processes? What is something that you were like, there is no way that's possible? And then you research and found that it was, but it was so kind of unbelievable at the time you were presented with it. It was like, what?
I mean, it's a decade of weird stuff being told to you.
Yeah, no, I know. That's why I didn't know if there was one that came to mind, because every now and then, like even our listener tales, people say stuff and I'm like, oh, that's really unpleasant that that happened to them, you know, but it's so different and weird that those kind of things have gone on.
Right. I mean, I can't think of one that, I mean, that I found out was true, because ultimately a lot of these are anecdotal tales. I mean, certainly people have reported. I think the weirdest ones would be those times when somebody reports something in one area, and it may sound outlandish. Like, I mean, I had a guy who reported, it wasn't a lizard man per se. This was like an upright walking alligator walking on two legs. And you're like, what? You know, it just seems like a singular thing, but the guy was very credible. And then you'll hear someone, you know, this could come a year later or any other time, someone else will report that in the same general area. And you're like, these people don't know each other. There's no newspaper article. It sounds like some crazy story that I'm entertaining. But once you have another person tell you that they had seen something similar and these two people don't know each other, now you're like, oh, okay, now we're on to something, you know. And that's the weirdest ones for me, where they sound outlandish, but then suddenly you'll get a witness who corroborates that in some way. That's one of the cases, that upright walking alligator. And there's other ones like that. It could be as simple as two people seeing a Bigfoot in an area that doesn't have Bigfoot sightings, but then now you got two people saying. But yeah, and the I love those things, because the longer you do this and the more you kind of reach out, the more you can kind of build a case. Where there's one witness, there's always another one.
I just wanted to share an anecdote, since it happened over the weekend and we were talking about different types of Sasquatches. We were at a downtown event and this nice older lady came by the table and she looked down at like one of my art prints of, I think it was the Grass Man. And she was like, he shouldn't be scowling. He should be smiling. They're actually really friendly. I talked to them, and she just kind of kept walking before I even was able to react to her saying that. But it was just very matter of fact. She was just letting me know. And I'm like, okay, now I'm going to have to do some more friendly Bigfoot art, because obviously that's pretty cool.
I love that, because she probably does go out and have tea with the Bigfoot, you know, and like take them some cookies and stuff. Totally natural. It kind of reminds me of the Betty White with Lake Placid, where she's like, I hope it eats all of your sheriff's deputies. I love that, because I'm like, there have got to be little old ladies that are out there just, yeah, having tea with Sasquatch, right? Totally fine. Normal day, right? Oh, so cool. Okay. Well, where can people find you? Where's the best place to find all of your books and where you're going to be and stuff like that?
The best place would be to visit my website at lyleblackburn.com. And that's got links off to, you know, my various projects and works and everything I participated in, from books to movies to music. And, you know, I'm on Facebook and Instagram as well. So, you know, you can follow me on all of those platforms.
Well, Lyle, I want to say thank you so much for joining us today. It has been so awesome to talk to you.
Absolutely. Glad I could work it in.
Wonderful, wonderful. Okay, travelers out there who are listening, here's my advice to you. The veil is really, really thin right now. So remember, when you're going out into those woods and you're looking for whatever else is out there with you, remember to be smart about it so that a giant walking alligator doesn't take you down. And with that, we will see you on the other side.
Stay warm and save every day, all in the Kroger app. Get tender USDA Choice boneless chuck roast or stew meat for $6.99 a pound. Then get 2-liter bottles of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $1.49 each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.